Fauci had to respond to me. So his team responded and tried to say, oh, well, Dr. Lee, we appreciate your concerns. Thank you for the letter to Dr. Francis Collins, Dr. Anthony Fauci. But I listed everybody. And I sent that letter to thousands of people. And my mentor is the director of ophthalmology at Johns Hopkins. When I told him what I had found, that was around May of 2020, he was shocked. He said, this is Dr. Peter McDonald. He goes, Joe, you're going to get a Nobel Prize for this. I have the best paper trail on earth to put Fauci in prison for life. Everyone says, oh, he knew what he was doing was evil. Well, do they have evidence of that? I have evidence that Fauci got my exact scientific information, that he did not have a rebuttal, but that he still wanted to roll out the vaccine. I have that evidence. These people aren't listening. You know, I call up the FDA media director. I mean, I have hundreds of emails to the FDA, and I have responses from them. They're on the hook. The chief legal counsel, everybody. I gave him all the information, and yet he just hung up on me after understanding everything and realizing, oh, I'm explaining to him very carefully. He understands all, and then he hangs up on me.
Welcome to the Days of Noah podcast, where we talk all things biblical, supernatural, and strange. Today, Luke and I are joined by Dr. Joe Lee. Dr. Lee is the founder of LASIK Eye Centers, and he has some explosive information that he has tried to get out to the masses, to the authorities, the FDA, Fauci, the other anti-vax whistleblowers out in the world, that this COVID vaccine and half the vaccines on the childhood schedule are causing incredible collateral damage due to this string mechanism, as he calls it. And he has the paper trail to prove that this information has gone out to these people in authority and they've done nothing with it. So Dr. Lee is truly a courageous whistleblower, and he exposes the flaws in many of these vaccines that end up making them have no net benefit on human health, but instead act more like a bioweapon in many cases. And, you know, if you read RFK Jr.'s book, The Wuhan Cover-Up, you'll understand the basis for the vaccine industry is tied to the bioweapon industry. They work hand in hand. So we are thankful for Dr. Lee to join us. I discovered him by listening to an episode of his on the SGT Report with Sean, which I will post a link to in the show notes. So guys, thanks for listening. Please remember to follow our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and to share this episode with family and friends. If you'd like to support us further, choose a support link in the show notes description, or simply just leave a positive review or click 5 stars to help push the algorithm out to more people to get these episodes out there. With that, let's get into our conversation with Dr. Joe Lee. Well, welcome, Dr. Joe Lee. We're privileged to have you on the Days of Noah podcast. And as we were talking earlier, I discovered you on Sean's program, SGT Report. Sean was nice enough to have us on his show a few months ago, and that's definitely bumped our listenership up. So thank you all you listeners out there who have come on in the last couple months, thanks to Sean. So, but yeah, I mean, seeing your episode talking about vaccines, half the childhood vaccines and the COVID vax in particular as a bioweapon, a net negative on human health. I just thought, man, this is something I've always been intrigued by, alternative health, understanding that a lot of what is thrown at us, mainstream health and medical wise, is a very controlled narrative. And so this information is important to get out there. So maybe just tell us a bit about kind of your background. You know, you're the founder of the LASIK Eye Centers, right? And that you're a very credentialed individual. And then kind of how you came across these discoveries.
Yeah, so it's quite a story. I mean, I can go back forever, but so when I started studying really hard, that was in college, I started really enjoying science. And then when I went to medical school, I went to a top 10 medical school, University of Michigan. I got interviews everywhere. But I was such a challenger. I mean, I fought the system everywhere I went. And even in medical school, even in college, I fought the pre-med committee chairman so hard that he didn't like me. So when I went to my University of Chicago medical school interview, the secretary tells me, Sonny, you're not going to get in anywhere. And I was just like, oh, my GPA was amazing. And my MCAT score was really good, better than the average at Harvard that year. And I just couldn't understand it. And she goes, I'm not supposed to show you this letter, but I'm going to show you. And she shows me the letter of recommendation from my pre-med committee chairman, who I had a huge fight with. He wrote on that letter, Joe is an average student, right in the middle of the page. He actually practically ruined he almost ruined my life. I got waitlisted at all the medical schools, some of the medical schools I didn't get interviews at, but I got interviews at like top 7 medical schools. And everyone waitlisted me because of that. University of Michigan accepted me off the waitlist at the very last moment. And so I got into medical school. Now, even in medical school, I had a problem. I just don't like things that don't work well. My whole life, I've had an issue with things that don't work well. I'm like, why should I be a part of that? So my chosen profession was neurosurgery. I wanted to do the hardest thing I could find. And I wanted to be a brain surgeon. For 2 years of medical school, that's all I studied. I mean, I studied it hard. I mean, Kendall and Schwartz is their neuroscience text. I just practically memorized it. For medical school, the first 2 years, you just study. The third year, you start your clinicals. When I did my rotation in neurosurgery, within 3 days, I realized this isn't for me. Nothing works well. I mean, I saw the lower back surgery, and if you can imagine having lower back pain, I have upper back pain right now, but if you have lower back pain, the back is your spine. It's in the back. And they enter it from the front. And, you know, in the 90s, you know, late 80s, 90s, when I was in medical school, they're cutting the, you know, they're entering from the front. They've got these retractors that are so big, they look like, you know, arms. And I'm holding that as a medical student, and they're diving into this patient, going through everything to get to the spine in the back. And I said, this isn't for me. It looks like a slaughterhouse. And, you know, their next surgery was some kind of glioblastoma or something. Whatever. I said, I can't do this. I can't pretend to be an awesome person and have to explain to, you know, Johnny's parents, oh, your surgery didn't work so well. It just,
yeah.
Of course, if I have brain cancer, I'm going through the best. But I couldn't imagine myself doing this day in and day out. So I stayed home for a month. And guess what happened? They failed me. But my whole life was about preferring fair things and things that work well. So when the COVID vaccine came out, well before in January 2020, when COVID started being a big thing and everyone was talking about it, I planned it out in my mind. And I figured out most of my answers back in January 2020. I said, look, there are times when I get sick, and I know I'm sick because I get a scratchy, itchy throat. And in 3 days, I'm over it. Now, the rhinovirus, I'm pretty sure it was that because there were people around me sniffling and coughing, and I got it. And in 3 days, I'm fine. Now, how did that happen that I was fine? Because a rhinovirus infects a cell, replicates inside that cell, comes out, replicates other cells, infects other cells, and then replicates. I said, you know, that process of infecting and replicating, why would it ever stop? Because it was able to do it the first time. It was able to do it enough so that I could feel sick and a scratchy throat. Why did it keep doing it? So something happened in all the cells to change. because the virus could no longer infect the cells. So what happened? So I played it out in my mind, very simply, with a friend on the phone, and I said, I'm going to pretend to be a cell. If I get infected by the virus, and the virus injects its RNA into my cell, well, it's the enemy. What should I do with it? Well, I should destroy it. I shouldn't accidentally help it. And I should tell all the other cells, the friendly allies, the friendlies, how to fight this enemy. The way you fight it is you don't grow, okay? So you destroy the RNA inside the cell. The viral RNA, you destroy it. You don't help it grow. It wants to become protein. You don't help it. You don't eat. And third, you warn all the other cells how to fight it. Tell them not to grow. So interferon runs around. This is interferon is a molecule that our cells produce. Our body produces interferon, which is the most potent antiviral medication on earth. And our body produces it. Whenever we get sick, we produce it. That's why you feel a little sick and you have this malaise and muscle aches, because of the interferon. So I looked it up. There it was. Ribonucleases destroy RNA. Why can't it destroy viral RNA? It can. And then I discovered how to activate it. You activate it by fasting. So fasting, it's like a wood stove. You have a lot of fuel inside a wood stove, you'll have less oxygen. So if our body has a lot of fuel, we have less oxygen. If we have less fuel, we have relatively more oxygen. The oxygen oxidizes the ribonuclease inhibitor, which comes off. The ribonuclease inside our cells can now destroy the viral RNA. And I tell everyone, look back to 2020. Do you know anyone on earth who had a COVID-19 antibody in the year 2020 before COVID infections? How could they have? The only way you can get natural immunity is if you've had the infection. And then you wait a few weeks to a couple months for the antibodies to build up. But that means in 2020, if you got COVID for the first time, you had no COVID-19 antibodies, and yet you healed. So if you don't know how you healed, I always tell people, look, I'm a surgeon. If I have a brand new assistant who doesn't know what I'm doing, and they don't know what my next steps are, they don't know what my surgical goals are, they're in no position to ever help me, ever. They can never help me. The only way for a new assistant to help me is to know what my goals are and what I did, what I want to do. So if the human body healed 19 million Americans in the year 2020 and no COVID-19 antibodies were around, don't we want to know how we healed? Because the only way to facilitate the human body is to know what it did. And you can't just say the body healed us. You got to tell me how. Give me the mechanism. So once the virus enters our lung cells, that viral RNA is the enemy. Is there anyone on earth who explains how that was destroyed? Because the only way you can help the human body is to know what it did so incredibly well, and it healed 19 million of us at least in the year 2020, and it did not use a COVID-19 antibody. It's like me being a surgeon and the new assistant keeps handing me a scalpel, and I say, I didn't ask for it, did I? Did I ask for a scalpel? No, I didn't. You do what I tell you to do. That's the only way they can facilitate me. The only way you can facilitate the human body is to know what it did in the year 2020. And it did not use a COVID-19 antibody to heal us. And that's the most incredible thing. It is the single biggest collective brain fart among scientists that you will ever hear about again. That the scientific community gave the COVID-19 antibody hero status. It gave that one molecule hero status. But please tell me, what did it do? It wasn't even present in the year 2020. And so whatever enzyme, and I think it's the RNase enzyme, the ribonuclease enzyme, that is the hero, the unsung hero. That is the reason why we all survived. And it's always within ourselves. And what's my proof that this RNase, when it's activated by fasting, is the reason why we heal? So if you have children, when they were toddlers and they got sick, uniformly, the one thing they do, they stop eating. They get fussy and eat less. Mm-hmm. Because whether you're a Christian or whether you believe in evolutionary biology or wherever you are in the belief about where we came from, 7 billion infants on Earth, all of us, every one of us, 99.999% of us, when we were young and we got sick, we got fussy and we ate less. Because that behavior of not eating as much when you have a viral illness is the most useful thing on Earth. The COVID-19 antibody can't help us. It wasn't there in the year 2020. And then, okay, so let's say it finally arrives. What I found was, and I told Fauci in September 2020, I said, look, Fauci, you think it's your antibody. The lung is an airspace. There's a blood-lung barrier. It's not a phrase I invented. It's been around for hundreds of years. They've known about this. Well, our body is mostly water. Water molecules don't fill our lung because the blood-lung barrier is like a waterproof jacket. Okay, so the antibody is made outside the lung. The lung cells being infected by COVID, the COVID virus, are inside the lung barrier, the lung alveolar epithelial cells. And the antibody, in order to neutralize that virus, has to get inside the lung, has to pass the blood-lung barrier. But the blood-lung barrier can stop water molecules, which have 18 protons. The COVID IgG antibody has 145,000 protons. It's a molecule that is gargantuan in size and 8,000 times more mass than a water molecule. And the waterproof jacket can stop the water molecule. And why does Fauci think that this antibody can enter? So I explained that in a one-page letter to Fauci. I sent that letter to every member of Congress. Fauci had to respond to me. So his team responded and tried to say, oh, well, Dr. Lee, we appreciate your concerns. Thank you for the letter to Dr. Francis Collins, Dr. Anthony Fauci. But I listed everybody. And I sent that letter to thousands of people. So when he, and my mentor is the director of ophthalmology at Johns Hopkins. When I told him what I had found, that was around May of 2020, he was shocked. He said, this is Dr. Peter McDonald. He goes, Joe, he trained me in refractive surgery at USC Doheny in 1998. He goes, Joe, you're going to get a Nobel Prize for this. And we've kept in touch for 3.5 years. So this is an academic who, there's not an ophthalmologist on Earth who doesn't know who Dr. Peter McDonald is. He's a chief editor of Ophthalmology Times. He's been there for 10, 15 years. The director of ophthalmology at Johns Hopkins, the number one or two ophthalmology residency on Earth. And he's had my back for 3.5 years. And he, whenever we chat, he is just startled at the amount of ridiculousness on the other side, on the vaccine side. So now to Fauci, I explain, Dr. Fauci, your premise, your hypothesis of a neutralizing antibody in the lung, which is the reason why you got your FDA EUA approved, that hypothesis is flawed because your antibody can't get into the lung. It's science 101. It's second grade science. The molecule actually has to be there for it to work. Now, if I show it wasn't there in time, in 2020, there was no COVID-19 antibodies. And I show it can't be there in space. It can't get through the lung barrier. Okay, so that's two huge scientific reasons why the COVID-19 antibody could never have been the reason why we got better. And yet, Dr. Fauci ignored it. So what did I do? Yeah, no, the reply is an email, and it's permanent. And, you know, it came from Dr. Emily Rebelding's office. She's the director of infectious disease at the NIH. So she works closely with Dr. Fauci. So I sent them a 73-page letter. I put a U.S. copyright on it. It details every aspect of this problem. So there can be no benefit via a neutralizing antibody in the lung if it has no path into the lung.
So just so we're clear, so as I was listening to your interview with Sean and you're talking about this barrier with the lung and not being able to affect any of the COVID virus in the lung, maybe myself and the listeners might not understand. Is that the primary way that COVID was affecting people was in the lungs? Or could someone make the case, oh, yeah, but it can attack COVID in other parts of the body? Like how important is getting to the lung for this to work?
Well, this is the issue. The mandate is basically the use of force to push everyone to get the vaccine. The only moral argument they have to say that the vaccine needed to be mandated was that if you could get sick with COVID and the virus replicates in your lung and you can breathe out poison and kill other people, then you can make a moral argument that, okay, guys, we have to stop you from killing other people. We're going to put these antibodies in your system that's going to get in your lung, that's going to drastically reduce the chances of you breathing out poison to other people. Okay, so that's a moral argument. There is no other argument but a moral argument where you might be killing other people. So with that argument, they were able to mandate this. Because remember, we have bodily autonomy laws that restrict the government from doing anything through our skin, our boundary between non-self and self. We have bodily autonomy laws, and they are some of our most sacred laws. And list the number of things the government is allowed to do to you through your lung, through your skin. What are they allowed to do right now? Zero. And then with that history of the government having that limited power over somebody else's body, the only way they could overturn, in their mind, justify having a mandate was if you are breathing poison on other people and killing them. The moment the antibody can't get into the lung, all that goes away. And you know, and then remember when I got on Twitter, I think I got on Twitter September 2022, right around that time, Pfizer came out with that, like, out of the blue announcement. We did not check for prevention of transmission. Remember that? Now, why did they say that? I have my ideas on why I think they said that, because a couple months before that, I taped this conversation with Moderna, and I scared the living daylights out of them. I explained everything to them on a phone call that was being recorded on their side and on my side. I kept telling them, I'm recording it. You're recording it too, right? We're both recording. And the physician complaint intake person at Moderna had to listen to me for 30 minutes. And I broke everything down. I said, you guys don't even know how your antibody enters lung. It doesn't even have a path. What you thought you were doing that was good, it's not really good. It's really bad. And he had no answers, of course. And I said, I'm going to release this tape. Now, I don't know what really happened at Moderna in their board meeting when all this information came out, but I have proof that they got it because they tried to email me. And so basically, they got the information and they want to pretend that it's not real, however they want to do that. But, you know, I have 73 pages describing this issue. And any scientist that reads it, like, whoa, we've got some major problems here. And then when I explained to Fauci that the antibody can't get in the lung, what they come back with? Dr. Emily Urbelden came back with a reference from Dr. Wagner 35 years ago, 1985 or so. 35 years old paper where Dr. Wagner says the antibody might cross by simple diffusion, but less than 1% of the time. That's her paper to me, okay? And she's quoting a 35-year-old article to justify vaccinating billions of people. 35 years old paper in medicine is ancient. It is so ancient. He didn't even know what he was talking about. He claims it's simple diffusion. We all understand what simple diffusion is. The bigger the molecule, the less it goes across impermeable barriers. And so that wasn't an answer. And that's why I say that I have the best paper trail on earth to put Fauci in prison for life. Because everyone says, oh, he knew what he was doing was evil. Well, do they have evidence of that? I have evidence that Fauci got my exact scientific information, that he did not have a rebuttal, but that he still wanted to roll out the vaccine. I have that evidence. And I have the back and forth with him. And in this first letter I sent to every member of Congress. So I have a very clear paper trail. And then my 73-page letter, I put a U.S. copyright on it. So I have the most clear evidence on earth that Fauci did something very bad and did not follow the science. So
yeah, and that's, I mean, honestly, that's his whole career. If going back to RFK's book, The Real Anthony Fauci, I mean, you look at the opportunities in the position that he has had over the health policy of our country for decades to make a real difference. And he sides with, you know, the big companies, you know, the sweetheart deals and, you know, remdesivir, you know, these drugs, his claim to fame with the AIDS drug that was basically on the junk pile heap as a chemo drug. I forget the name of it. It was so toxic. It had no chance of getting approved. And then he pushes it through, and now it's the AIDS savior that's actually killing people with no symptoms. I mean, he has a career of death. He's honestly, in my opinion, after reading that book, he's killed as many people as Hitler, indirectly. I mean, he's pure evil. But like you said, you have the paper trail. But our country, I mean, we have a history of this. When, you know, hiring Nazis, Operation Paperclip, the CIA, MK Ultra, stockpiling bio and chemical agents, using it on our own people. Some excerpts here from RFK's latest book, The Wuhan Cover-Up. There's 13,000 people working on bioweapons in over 400 labs that seem to have a bent on moral depravity, similar to the Japanese and Nazi war criminals. And then after the Cold War, we hired the Soviet bioweapons experts. So we're just bringing these people in and doing this kind of stuff. 239 different areas of the U.S. from 1949 to 1969, we tested bio and chemical agents on our own people. 239 different areas of our country by the military and CIA. So maybe, I mean, kind of with this background that you're talking about on there's no net benefit to this COVID. The other thing you discovered was this string theory, right? And how this affects half the childhood vaccines. So maybe get into that and how these things are actually bioweapons. They don't have a net benefit to humanity.
And Pete, I love how organized your mind is. Let me not talk about the string.
Appreciate it.
So, you know, everything that we do in medicine has what we call a risk divided by benefit ratio. So the benefit portion, basically, I show you, whatever perceived benefit the pro-vaccine industry thought that they had, well, oops, guys, we didn't check to see if our drug, our vaccine, our antibody actually makes it into the lung. Okay, so that's like drug development 101, pharmacokinetics. You just have to know that if a certain medication, antibiotic, can't be absorbed through our gut very well, we call that bioavailability. And if they don't have that, then what are you doing? They didn't even do the most basic studies on this. Okay, so you know the flu vaccine is what they modeled the COVID vaccine after, and the flu vaccine was around forever. And they didn't have good science when it first came out. And they just followed it. But so they keep repeating their errors over and over again, this vaccine industry. So this is the string mechanism. The string mechanism is this. It's so basic.
Welcome to the Lost Roman Heroes podcast. My name is Matthew.
And my name is Matteo.
We are serious nerds for Rome, and we are father and son.
Together on the Lost Roman Heroes podcast, we dive deep into the history of Rome, from its origin story starring Aeneas of Troy to its death with Constantine the 11th, uncovering Rome's greatest heroes along the way and ranking them.
There are plenty of great podcasts on the big men in Rome's history, guys like Caesar, Augustus, and Constantine, but that's not us. We're making this podcast to shed a light on Rome's forgotten heroes. From Cincinnatus to Scipio, from Aurelian to Belisarius and beyond, you will not believe the gems that we uncover. So please come join the Legion of Lost Roman Heroes and listen to us wherever you get your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, or find us at www.lostromanheroes.com.
That, you know, I have over 1,800 posts on the American Academy of Pediatrics X Twitter timeline in over 8 months. And I even call the American Academy of Pediatrics their board members baby killers based on, I had quite an explanation of that in one thread discussing why I call them baby killers. And that's for 8 months. Now, you would think that on X, if I'm so brazen to somebody of an organization and I embarrass them and I make them look bad, you would think they would block me. They haven't. They're unable to, because at the very beginning, I explained to them very carefully and very politely that, there's a huge, massive mistake in your vaccine paradigm. And I found it, and I'm just showing it to you, and I'm explaining the string mechanism to you people, and you have to have a rebuttal. This is what the string mechanism says. If you have a beaker of saline and you put polyclonal antibodies in it, and then you add its antigen, they will start clumping into visible precipitants. It's called a precipitin. And it's in the immunology textbooks for over 30, 40 years. You can see pictures of it, diagrams of it. It's well-established science. This precipitin test, if you Google it, there are millions of hits on it on Google. They're not going to be able to get away with it. So you give a COVID vaccine to a person. The only kind of antibodies that humans create to foreign antigens are polyclonal antibodies, especially if the antigen molecule is fairly medium-sized. And the COVID spike antigen does have multiple antigenic sites, meaning there is no scientist on earth that will argue that when you are injected with a spike antigen, you will form polyclonal antibodies to it. Not monoclonal antibodies, polyclonal antibodies. So if you put into a beaker of saline polyclonal antibodies to spike antigen, and then you add spike antigen, do you know what happens? It clumps. It precipitates out. It's called a precipitin. It's virtually impossible for them to argue. Why? Because now these precipitins are visible. If something is visible, that means to the naked eye, that means it's at least 100,000 nanometers in diameter.
Right, which is like the width of a piece of paper, right?
Yeah, but capillaries are only 10,000 nanometers in diameter. So the precipitin on its own, with nothing else, could block blood vessels that are 10 times larger than capillaries. And if it's all over your body, you're going to notice that. It's going to have a very detrimental effect. So precipitins are in their textbooks. And they never checked for precipitins with vaccines, because you have a three-year-old boy, Johnny. He went to the pediatrician. He got his DPT vaccine. Now he has polyclonal DPT antibodies in his blood, and a lot of them. Just when he has the most, at 3 months, you give him the DPT antigen into his blood. Why are you putting the DPT antigen into his blood? He has the DPT antibodies in his blood from your vaccine 3 months ago. Why are you adding the DPT antigen? Because won't those DPT antibodies bind to the DPT antigen? So what do I use in this string mechanism? I start with your antigen. That's it. Nothing else. Your body produces polyclonal antibodies. And then the antigen and antibody clump together and cause visible precipitins, which are large enough on its own to block blood vessels and cause ischemic damage.
So a couple questions on that. Monoclonal, there was a lot of talk about that as a therapy for COVID, right? So does our body produce only mono so that it can't keep creating this string?
No. That's only if you take one lymphocyte cell that can produce an antibody, and you take that one cell and you duplicate it identically, that's a clone. That's one, mono meaning one, and one clone. And then you'll have the exact same antibody. But otherwise, you won't. Because the spike antigen has many antigenic sites all over. You could form an antibody to this side, to this side, to this side, to this side. Why would the B lymphocyte only produce an antibody to to the bottom of the spike antigen. It could easily produce an antibody to the top or the side. There is no way to restrict it. There's no one on earth, no scientist that would say, you know, if you look at monoclonal antibodies, it has to be done in a lab because they have to separate out all the lymphocytes and just take one and clone that. So no, you cannot produce monoclonal antibodies.
So how does that compare to the body's normal mechanism of fighting things? I mean, obviously the body system is not creating these string clots on its own. This is a man-made, or maybe it is.
No, I see. What I'm saying about the string mechanism, that antibodies and antigen, that they bind together and then they can clump and grow bigger and bigger and snowball. For example, hepatitis B. Okay, when a liver cell is infected with hepatitis B, it produces a lot of hepatitis B surface antigen. It doesn't just create the intact virus to go out and infect other liver cells. It also produces a lot of hepatitis B surface antigen. That is the antigen that we form antibodies to. So then your body produces antibodies. Then the liver cells, in fact, the cells produce more hepatitis B surface antigen. Then the antibodies and the antigen will stick together. So we know that in chronic hepatitis B, there is plenty of kidney damage. And they always have said, it's just an immune response. That doesn't cut it. You have to describe the mechanism. The mechanism I describe is you're forming precipitants. And those precipitants are going everywhere. And they're damaging blood vessels and causing ischemic damage everywhere. But if it happens in your muscle, well, you just form another blood vessel and you'll grow a new one. If it happens, you know, in certain areas, you might not notice so much. But kidney cells are not replaceable. Brain cells are not replaceable. So if you damage those areas, well, you're going to have an effect and you're going to see it. And even kidneys are low. So what I'm saying is that every chronic infectious disease, this string mechanism will start to explain symptomatology. You go to Lyme disease. Is it a foreign antigen? Yes. Did your body produce antibodies? Yes. Do we want the antibodies? Yes, because we need to kill the Lyme bug. Borrelia burgdorferi, whatever it is. So you see, in the process of killing the foreign antigen, because in nature, we don't just get foreign antigen. It's stuck to a bug, a bacteria or a virus, the antigen. We're trying to kill that pathogen. That's why we have antibodies. Everyone forgets why we have antibodies. The point of having an antibody is to destroy the antigen. That's the point. And everyone forgets this. I'm like, why do you want antibodies? Why do you think you need the antibody? It's to destroy the pathogen. Now, the body, these antibodies, they don't know that if you just put spike antigen, that it's not attached to the virus. They'll still try to destroy the spike antigen, right? So that's the whole point. The whole point is the string mechanism shows that there's always damage when you have a war. There's always collateral damage. Now, when you have a real enemy and you destroy the real enemy and some innocent people die, that's collateral damage. You have to suck it up and deal with it, and you have to take it because there was a huge real enemy. But when there isn't an enemy and you're creating a war and you're blowing up things, why are you doing that?
So that's, you're making the comparison of when a vaccine is introducing it to the body, it sees it as an invader. You're saying now you're doing collateral damage without the enemy actually being there.
Exactly what's happening.
Okay. And versus how your body normally fights something, there is an actual invader.
And when we get a sickness, there's going to be some damage to our tissues. But we have to suck it up.
To be clear, the body's natural immune response does not create these precipitants that cause damage?
They do.
They do?
But okay. We have to suck it up.
Right. That's the natural. Okay. So the difference is with vaccines, is it a worse
string clotting precipitants? Or is it just the fact that there's collateral damage with no benefit?
It's both. Because remember, okay, when you have a COVID infection, the antigen is on the virus. Now, if that virus with the spike antigen goes into the blood, it can't really form the clumping because one antibody has two arms. It can't bind a big virus here and a big virus here. They're way too big. So it can't join them all together to link them into a string because the virus itself is too big. But if you only have the spike, it can act as glue between the antibody molecules and keep connecting them up. That can't happen if it's really big. That's why I always say the string mechanism will destroy half the vaccines on Earth. Because if they use an attenuated virus, it doesn't cause the precipitin. It doesn't cause ongoing clumping. If you kind of have to look at the diagram to see it. But an antibody is a Y. If you can imagine...
shaped like a Y, yeah.
Yeah, let's say you have an alphabet, an antigen shaped like an O. That's about the size of the Y. Then you can imagine an O sitting on one arm of the antibody, an O sitting on the other arm. But if that O is 1,000 times bigger, then you can't put two O antigens on that Y. Because one would cover both arms. And so then you can't get the linking. You can't link, keep having an ongoing link. That's what precipitin is. Precipitin is at least 100,000 nanometers, and an antibody is 10,000. Antibody is 10 nanometers in length. So there are a lot of antibody molecules in this precipitin.
So essentially, is this why we're seeing these videos of cadavers of people who've taken the COVID vax and boosters, and they're pulling out these giant clots? Well, is this kind of what you're saying is happening?
What I'm saying is, do I have proof of that? You know, proof is a very strange thing, right, in science. Do I have proof? Well, what is proof? Did the other side ever have proof that their antibody bound the virus in the blood of a patient? No, they never had that. Did they? I've never seen that publication. While they created an antibody in patient zero, they created an antibody. That patient zero got a virus infection. That antibody that they created bound to that virus in the blood of that patient. Do they have video of that? Isn't that proof? They don't have proof. Do I have proof that this happens? I don't have proof. But I have just as much proof as they do. So we're on the same page, aren't they? Actually, I have more because what I say is that COVID antibody that you produce in that blood of a patient, it has an infinitely greater chance of sticking to your antigen, spike antigen, than a real live virus spike antigen. Because that antibody is going to stick to the spike antigen. Is it going to stick to a free spike antigen from your vaccine? Or is it going to stick to a spike antigen on a virus? It's going to stick to your spike antigen from your vaccine, meaning the main effect of the antibody that results from the vaccine, the main effect is to cause damage, not to create benefit.
Yes, and that's where you call it a.
Go ahead.
That's where you call it a bioweapon. So maybe explain how. Yeah, because you're saying half the childhood vaccines have this same issue.
Correct.
What makes those ones similar to the COVID vaccine, where they have this net negative on human health? Versus the ones that don't have that mechanism?
Well, I mean, looking at it from the big picture, the reason, look how crazy this gets, okay? So heart cells express ACE2 receptors. Very well-known fact. Many cells in the body express ACE2 receptors. Lung cells express ACE2 receptors. The spike antigen binds to the ACE2 receptor. The COVID antibody binds to the spike that's stuck on the ACE2 receptor, and then the body destroys that cell. Meaning, there's not just one mechanism I found. I found several. Now, how is it possible that one person finds so many things wrong with this vaccine paradigm? The reason why I'm able to find it is because the paradigm is wrong. meaning every mother in the U.S. knows that antibiotics are not helpful against viruses.
Right.
Because bacteria, which antibiotics work great for, are a completely different enemy from viruses. They're not the same. They're very different enemies. So antibiotics, which are very useful against bacteria, there's no chance that they would work against a virus because it's a completely different enemy. So antibodies work great against bacteria. Why would they ever work against a virus? It wouldn't. So I explain it like this. What do I think is important? What do I think is important when you have respiratory viral infection? I think that fasting is important. Okay. So when somebody gets sick, what do they do? If fasting was really important for these toddlers, well, some toddlers will actually not eat when they get sick, and some toddlers will actually eat more when they get sick. What happens to the ones that eat more? They die. Let's pretend that vitamin C was really important when you have a respiratory viral infection. A lot of people think that. Paul Sliding won a Nobel Prize. He thinks vitamin C is the answer to everything. Okay, so if vitamin C was important, then toddlers who got sick and had a craving for sour candy would do better. And then more of them would survive. And then that next generation would be have a slightly higher percentage of babies that liked sour fruit, like lemons, when they got sick. And then every generation, the toddlers that liked sour fruit when they got sick would be a bigger and bigger part of the population until, after a million generations of humans, every toddler who got sick would want lemons. Do you see that? No. What do they all do? Stop eating. It's not antibodies. It's not vitamin C. It's not vitamin D. If vitamin D was that important when you got COVID, what would happen? All toddlers would crawl towards the sun and lounge in the sun like a lizard. Because even if it was only 3% of the population, if it was really important, the next generation would be 4% of the population because the others would die off. And the babies that like to crawl into the sun, they would survive. And then every generation, you would increase that percentage that like to crawl into the sun for vitamin D. And a million generations later, it'd be 99.9%. But what is it today? What it is today is 99.99% of toddlers that get sick eat less. They get fussy and they eat less because that is the answer.
Yeah. So, but going back to what is it about, because you're saying half the childhood vaccines have this string mechanism problem. So I'll rephrase it another way. What is it that those vaccines do that create these precipitant issues that other vaccines don't?
DPT, they use antigen molecules that are much smaller. They're much smaller in size. They're in the range of 5 to 15 nanometers in diameter, that kind of size. Viruses are 100 nanometers in size. So viruses are much too big as an antigen. If you have an attenuated virus, the measles virus is an attenuated virus. It's much too big for one antibody to link it to another antibody so you can form a string and then a clump and then a precipitant. But the ones that use smaller molecules, like the spike antigen, then those can actually still cause the problem.
Okay.
That's not to say the other half of vaccines aren't stupid. I just happened to find a flaw that shows how silly it is. But the other vaccines all have the problem too.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I was referencing to Luke before you got on here a couple of books. One is Suzanne Humphrey's Dissolving Illusions, where she outlines this. You know, we have a false understanding of history that when vaccines came along, it was like this savior to mankind, and all these diseases that were killing us so easily were eradicated. And the truth is that sanitation, the toilet, had more to do with better health than these things. And you can look at the graphs and show that, you know, the uptake of these vaccines happened after the death rates were dropping. So, you know, it's my opinion that vaccines are a net negative on human health. The things we're taking a vaccine for have such a minute risk, or they're mitigated in other ways. You know, I mean, just, you know, what was interesting about RFK's latest book, The Wuhan Cover-Up, is how he outlines the history of bioweapons in our country. And that the vaccine and bioweapon programs work in tandem. They have to. You're not going to create a weapon to use in war and not be able to protect your own soldiers. So they work in tandem, and they're often masquerading as vaccine research when they research these bioweapons. And that's just, you know, business as usual. That's how the CIA operates and our government and military operate. Well, with the time we have left, maybe just speak to how you've been trying to get out this important information to the who's who in the anti-vax community, and any follow-ups since you talked to Sean about that, because I know he brought up Del Bigtree at the High Wire, who's done fantastic work for years getting out the truth in the health and medical community against the mainstream narrative. What have you found when you're trying to get this information out and say these things are dangerous? This COVID vax is dangerous.
Well, I can tell you that almost all the anti-vax leaders on X don't like me, and I have a lot of science, and I to them I crashed the party late because I fought from January 2020, but I was fighting on my own, and I was sending out emails, calling directors. I mean, I'm from the science side. This is what I thought I was supposed to do. I wasn't going to go on social media, on Twitter. I thought I was just too superficial and kind of fluff. I needed to reach out. I mean, I emailed the authors of the original FDA clinical trial. I really thought they would listen to me. So what I did was I created a paper trail for over 2 years. And then when I had exhausted every possible avenue, and I realized these people aren't listening, you know, I call up the FDA media director. I mean, I have hundreds of emails to the FDA, and I have responses from them. They're on the hook, the chief legal counsel, everybody. I called up the FDA media director, and I was just shocked that I gave him all the information, and yet he just hung up on me after understanding everything and realizing, oh, I'm explaining to him very carefully. He understands all, and then he hangs up on me. See, this is – so then I went to the anti-vaxxers, the leaders, and – they already had their fame. Malone, McCullough, McCrory, RFK, they all had their social media fame. They were not in a – they did not want to have me in the group, apparently. Looking back, that's what happened, because RFK got my information. Well, he ordered – it looks like – I don't know for sure, but it looks like he ordered silence on it. He won't let any of his people do anything with it. So to me, that's like – I don't even know what to say, because I have proof of it. Because I sent RFK's attorney my information. He gave me 5 minutes to explain everything I did. So then the attorney sends it to RFK with my 73 pages, everything. And then RFK forwards it to his 12 or 13 consultants that same day because he was excited about it. And then Dr. Paul Alexander even emails back, because there was a back and forth with that email everywhere. And then Paul Alexander even says, I'm 100% correct. Dr. Lee is 100% correct. And yet RFK does not ever use that information to expose the COVID vaccine, that the antibody doesn't even get into the lung. Back at August 2022 was when RFK got that information. So it's almost been 2 years, and why doesn't he use it? And now I have the string mechanism is the best ever. Why doesn't RFK use it? So RFK is a politician. He's going to do what's good for him. If it happens to help children, great. If it's not convenient, if it doesn't help him at the time, then he may not help children. You can see the string mechanism is the nuke for the vaccine industry. And for somebody like RFK not to use it makes anyone question what his real motivations are. I don't know.
Well, it makes you wonder. I mean, you mentioned it, I think, with Sean. Is it ego? Or the other two possibilities or combination thereof is controlled opposition. So it's either I'm gonna let you profit in this way, or I'm gonna threaten you in this way. And
so I go after everyone. Yeah. That's a problem. I mean, I don't even trust the Malone. You know, you see those three people, Malone, Corey, and McCullough. They got my information from Senator Ron Johnson too, because about May of 2022, I reached out to Senator Ron Johnson, and their staff loved my information. And then they had to talk about my information with their consultants, and then they lost interest. And their consultants, I found out later, were Malone, McCullough, and Corey. So the opposition leaders aren't what you think. They're not. They have a lot of ego, and they don't necessarily want to share the spotlight.
I wanted to ask, what about America's frontline doctors? Because I know during the height of the pandemic, it seemed like they were one of the loudest voices in opposition of the mandates and things. Did they ever reach out to you, or did you ever speak to any of them?
No, it's incredible the number of physicians that, you know, got their fame that want to have nothing to do with me, because they don't really have science. If you boil down what they're doing, you ask them, oh, they have protocols. This is what I always tell people. You think you saved lives during COVID. As a physician, you think you saved life. Tell me how you did it. Please tell me how. Because if you don't know what the human body actually did to heal us, then why do you think you helped? How do you know you helped? Because you're like that new assistant who has no clue what the surgeon wants to do, and yet you're so pompous and so sure you're helping. I think you just didn't get in the way. I think you just prevented the patient's blood pressure from collapsing. I don't think you healed anyone. The human body healed them, but you're taking credit for it. And they get mad at me because, oh, you're an ophthalmologist. What do you know? Well, I have a hypothesis, at least, on what actually happened in 2020 and how we heal from COVID. You don't even have a hypothesis. I have a hypothesis. My hypothesis says the RNA enzyme destroyed the viral RNA. And it's a very strong one. And you'll never find a better one. You don't even have a hypothesis, but you think you're helping the human body. Tell me how. If you don't know how the human body helped us, why are you in a position to say you helped? But they've got their pride, and doctors have a lot of it. And, you know, if they're a pulmonologist, they especially don't like me. Why? Because I'm an ophthalmologist. And they're like, okay, so what would you possibly do? Well,
yeah. Well, this is the God complex. And again, I'm editing the first half of our interview with Dr. Monzo, and he's talking about our medical system that from about the 1910s, you know, the bankers, the oil cartel, the Rockefellers, they created this system that pushed out the herbalists, the Chinese medicine, the whole list. They pushed all that out, and now we're only going to train in these synthetic drugs. And they feel like we've got the best medical system in the world, and no one can touch us. And yeah, like you just said, what can you tell me? Your specialty is in this little narrow field. What can you tell me about my little narrow field? And
but you're both professionals, and you would think you would be colleagues on that kind of level of understanding medical, you know, how the body works way better than me and my brother could possibly. You would think someone like that would be like, yeah, that might not be my specialty, but let's have an intellectual conversation here.
Okay, so let's say I have this intellectual conversation with him, right? Look at what I did. From September 2020, I created a paper trail with Fauci that will put him in prison. 173 pages that are dense that explain most of the pandemic better than anyone else explains it today. I found the blood-lung barrier issue. I found the actual cure for COVID, how the RNA enzyme is actually further activated by fasting, and the actual mechanism to show that. I found the string mechanism which will destroy every future mRNA vaccine on Earth in the future and explains why half the childhood vaccines don't work. So I have way too many discoveries for them. They don't actually have a single iota of science. What they have collected is, oh, this patient died from the vaccine. Oh, this patient died. Okay, they have data. But see, science starts with a hypothesis. They don't even have a single hypothesis. Okay, so I have a lot of them, and I have very fundamental ones. So the moment that we start engaging, it ends up me teaching them. It ends up them saying, oh, wow, you just blew my mind. And then they have to grow silent. Why? Because what do they have to contribute? They've got 500,000 followers. I've got 5,000. They're nothing. But their ego prevents them from reposting my information. Because it's not just like I have one little piece. I had the best paper, and I even created a legal paper trail for the vaccine injured. Because if somebody's injured, the PrEP Act gives the vaccine industry vaccine legal immunity. But the PrEP Act also says willful misconduct negates that vaccine immunity. So if I tell Pfizer, you have no idea how your antibody enters the lung. And the PrEP Act says that if you continue to give this vaccine out without informing the public that you don't know how the antibody enters the lung, that's willful misconduct. And I have all those emails. So I create this paper trail that creates a legal path for the vaccine injured. So not only did I find a ton of science, I have provided a legal paper, legal path for recourse for these vaccine injured. And what did they do? What did Malone do? What did he do? He invented the mRNA technology that created all this problem for us. And he didn't see any of these flaws. And I find a million flaws with it that he, okay, here's one. Half-life of an IgG antibody is 4 to 6 weeks. So you get your COVID vaccine and you have a lot of antibodies at 2 months. That's your peak. A month from that, you're at half. 2 months from that, you're at 25%. You should have been boosted at 4 months. At a year, when they recommended getting the rebooster, you were at 2%. But at month 11, you're at 4%. And at month 10, you're at 8%. Why didn't you get boosted at month 5? Forever. For every vaccine that you have, why don't you get boosted every 5 months forever? You see, if Malone, when he hears me talk, I call him moron Malone. Why? Because if anyone should have understood that information when RFK forwarded it to him, Malone should have understood it and should have said, Dr. Liu is right. We need to back this. We need to stop the vaccine right now with this information. The public would have used it. Oh, you mean the antibody doesn't even enter my lung? Oh, I'm not going to have my child vaccinated then. It would have been huge. But why?
Do you think they were just afraid? I mean, when you got governments mandating this vaccine,
the pressure.
Are they just the pressure of an individual, even a bunch of doctors coming together? There's still a lot of pressure when you're looking at coming against.
They can always contact me on the side, DM me. They can always find a way. Privately. Hey, I can't believe you got this great information. Let's use it. They didn't do any of that. They just had their egos. See, I thought every possible thing before I reached out to them a million times, right? And then
found any allies?
There are a few, but even the few that are convinced by me, they grow quiet about it because they want to grow their presence. What can I say?
Right. They want to take the credit. You know, that's so sad. And you were describing a few minutes ago, honestly, the difference between science and scientism. Yes. Because you're coming forward and saying, let's look at the data, let's be rational. You know, to use a Bible verse that you might know from your childhood, let's reason together. Okay? Let's reason together. Let's look at the data. What is modern scientism? We tell you what is acceptable. What does Fauci say? I am science. If you disagree with me, you're disagreeing with science.
So,
and again,
it's, I love this because, you know, you have to talk. Now, RFK Jr. is afraid to talk to me, afraid to just debate. I would be very, very nice in my debate. He won't debate me. Malone won't.
Who's the senator that was putting Fauci on the spot?
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul.
Yeah. He's an ophthalmologist. I've reached out to him a million different ways. Called up his offices, left long, had long chats with the staff.
There's a lot of gatekeepers too.
They're putting on, to me, they're putting on a show. And Rand Paul, you know, my mentor is the director of ophthalmology at Johns Hopkins, Dr. Peter McDonald. He's the chief editor of Ophthalmology Times. There's not an ophthalmologist on earth that doesn't know him. He says, I can't even get through to Rand Paul. He won't even listen to me. Really? See, Rand Paul has an ego that's over outsized. As an ophthalmologist, he's not incredible. His ego.
Are you hopeful that at some point here, because I was telling Pete before we even got on this morning, to me, it seems like it might be trickles. It might just be one article. But it seems like slowly, you know, 4 years later, we're starting to see some media that are saying, yeah, there are people that have been injured. There, you know, the mandates really shouldn't have gone that way. The lockdowns really shouldn't have happened like they did. So it's like the conspiracy theorists, they're actually listening to the ones that were trying to shout from the rooftops.
Because we're being proven right.
So I don't know. Are you hopeful that, I don't know, even if it takes another 4 years, that some of this information might come out?
Well, I mean, I hope the vaccine industry is destroyed by then, by a year. I mean, the vaccine industry is huge, makes billions of dollars annually. And the string mechanism is the scariest nightmare on earth for them. They've never seen anything this scary. Now, do you think they're going to try to fight it? Yes. Are they going to just roll over and give up their $20 billion a year? No. So they're going to fight it. Now, I've sent this out to hundreds and hundreds of immunologists, not a single rebuttal. I found every immunology journal I could find on X and sent it to all their editors. Not one has a rebuttal. There is no possible rebuttal for the string mechanism. The precipitin isn't even in their textbooks. They're stuck. So they're not going to fight this string mechanism on the open, are they? They got to fight dark. If I have to imagine how an evil, hypothetical evil vaccine industry would fight the string mechanism, how would they do it? They would spend money, right? And they would pay people off to be silent about it. Who is very silent about the string mechanism with the biggest anti-vax voice on earth, RFK Jr.? See, he's suspect. Because if this is indeed the biggest nightmare for the vaccine industry, and it's this powerful, and it is, there's no refutal, there's no rebuttal. That means that they're acknowledging it's correct. How could anyone say that I can't start with an antigen? That's all I start with. How could anyone say that they don't clump? It's in their textbooks. What else do I use? Nothing. I only use their best science. So then there is no possible rebuttal. So then this isn't just damage the vaccine industry hugely. This exposes hypocrites. Because if you're an anti-vaxxer, you would love my information. You'd be so happy.
That's one of the points I was going to make earlier, Dr. Lee, is the exposing of evil. You know, I feel like with a lot of things that have happened politically the last few years and with COVID, that there is an exposure of people doing the things that they're dark hearts want to do and letting them follow that course so that the public can see what's really going on. And, you know, voices like yours are important for that. And it's just like, man, I want to, you know, bang the table and go, how can people believe what the mainstream is telling them, what their government is telling them? Guys, look at this censorship that has happened, the people being deplatformed when the whole COVID thing came out, you know, and you still want to believe them. Like, you know, fool me once, that's on me. Fool me twice, you know, or fool me once, that's on you. Fool me twice, that's on me. And, you know, they're planning the next plandemic. A quote from another of Sean's guests was the WHO and others are building the infrastructure for the next pandemic. And so information like what you're presenting, I don't know if you're familiar with the authors that wrote a book called The Protocol That Kills. The death of Rob Skiba is meticulously documented through transcribed calls. They killed him with the ventilators and remdesivir. Against the Power of Attorney. Highly recommend you checking out that book, Dr. Lee, The Protocol That Kills. We had them on many episodes ago. But this is the death cult of our, you know, the powers that be. So we appreciate you helping get out this word, and we'll pray that it goes far and wide. What, maybe plug where people can contact you, and just what you're doing. Are you writing a book on this? I mean, how are you trying to be the squeaky wheel on this information?
My first Twitter account was Lee Lasik, and I had 45,000 followers in like 4 months, and they suspended me and canceled me, and they just gutted the whole account. I still have it verified, and they still bill me for it. But my new one I just got on with is Lasik Eye Center One. I had made the account long ago and never used it, and I just got on 6 months ago, 7 months ago with it, and because I had found the string mechanism after they closed my account. And RFK Jr., I think, had something to do with that, because I was writing a thread on him. And, you know, I might be being too hard on the guy, but then if I'm easy on him, I have to be easy on everybody. Why am I going to hold Fauci accountable if I don't hold RFK Jr. accountable? I don't know. I don't know all the details of everything because, you know, paradigm shifts are really large. For people to have believed that antibodies were useful against viruses, it was only an assumption. If an HIV patient was the first patient we ever found an antibody in, and we found this HIV antibody, and the HIV patient still died, we would have realized that antibodies were useless against viruses. But it turns out that the first antibodies we found were against easy viruses. I mean, smallpox isn't easy, but most people did not die. And then measles is even easier. And look at all the vaccines that are really successful. All the easy viruses that we handled for millions of years without vaccines. It's a paradigm shift. And it is. And a lot of people, and you know, see, like RFK, maybe he was doing good work. He wasn't ready for this paradigm shift. He wasn't ready to destroy all vaccines.
Well, he's running for president too. And it makes you wonder. I mean, listen, I'll give credit where credit's due. His last two books, fantastic information, right? But it makes you wonder.
Writing, I mean, when he was writing that book, you know, I was supposed to be on a podcast with him. His grandson David Whitecastle was trying to get through to me, and then all of a sudden started ghosting me. And this was when I was getting a lot of podcasts last year with the lung barrier issue.
Yeah,
and I even emailed CHC and said, "What the hell? Where's RFK? Why is he doing this? Why is he trying to silence me?" And they go, well, he went off the grid to write his book. He went off the grid and no one can contact him to write his book at a time like this. No, he was avoiding me. See, that gets even more suspicious. Why is he avoiding me? Oh, because I had such relevant information. And the truth is, he had the information, the best size on earth to stop the vaccine 2 years ago, and he didn't use it. It's very suspicious, right?
Well, let's be hopeful and prayerful that the people who can make a difference would have the intestinal fortitude like yourself to do that, because man, there, I'm trying to think of the example of, it was okay. It was Bart Sobrell, where he was talking about the moon landing footage being faked, and he showed it to the CBS executive.
That's the one conspiracy theory I like.
There you go. Okay. All right, we're on the same page here.
I forever didn't believe that we landed on the moon.
Yeah, well, let's check out our episode with him a couple months ago. But he's the CBS exec looked at the evidence and said, yeah, it was fake. He said, but I'm not going to be the guy that causes a civil war in America.
Yeah, you know why? I thought it was fake because, you know, when they landed on the moon, you know, to go back up to the mothership.
Yeah.
Remember, they miscalculated and they were wrong on their landing by, what, a couple hundred yards or something quite drastic. It wasn't calculated. Okay. So now, if they're trying to go back up to the mothership, and you know, when you're looking up at the night sky, it's dark. There are a lot of stars everywhere. And how are you going to find the mother spaceship? How are you going to find it? Because back then, did they have like homing? Did they have a way of, you know, triangulating and figure out, was there a signal on the mothership? I don't know. But I just thought, I know that things never work the way you think. They missed their landing by a lot.
Well, you don't do it on the first try. That was Bart's point, not to go down this rabbit trail too much.
Correct.
But he's like, how many times did it take, you know, for the first airplane to work? How many times,
he
brought up the 727 or 737 engine went through like 1,200 iterations before they landed on. Oh, no, but this one, 250,000 miles we did on the first try. Yeah. All right.
Well, I know we're finishing up, but tie that into the vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
This was rushed.
This was
rushed, and red tape was cut so they could push this out.
Yes.
And I know you complain or tie other vaccines, older vaccines have some other problems, but this COVID one was rushed.
It was rushed.
And you could say that's one of the main reasons why there's problems, you know, but they're not going to admit that.
They're not going to admit it.
No. No, that whole PREP Act to even make the emergency authorization, they in that rule, Dr. Lee, you know this, they had to say that there was no viable options to be able to have this emergency. That's why they had to squish hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin that were safe and effective and on the WHO's list of essential medical. It just goes on and on. Well, thank you, Dr. Lee. We appreciate
your time. Thank you guys for
all
you do. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. God bless your work. And so if you think of writing a book on this whole saga of what you've tried to get out, I'd be a buyer. I think keep us informed, keep in touch if you go down that road. But more people need to be whistleblowers, and I appreciate people that are. So thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.